So it's very hard for me to get up here. And it wasn't a choice. I was kind of called to do it. So here I am. But I guess I'll get right into it. So, I am a survivor. I'm a survivor of domestic violence, of sexual abuse, of child abuse. I come from divorced grandparents, divorced parents, and poverty. And I say I'm a survivor now, but I used to say I was a product. I was a product of these things. But I'm not a product of this sin. I'm a product of God. And I'm giving my testimony today as part of my healing process. Many times I've shut myself off from God, off from all feelings, feeling numb, head down, like one of my children with a sliver yelling at me to not take it out, don't look at it, it hurts. But like somehow quickly letting God take it from me would have been harder than letting it become red and swollen and infected and eventually maybe work itself out. Again, I fear speaking today. Many of these things I have never really said out loud before, especially not to many people. I felt that by telling my story, I somehow would be revoking the forgiveness I've given and betraying the ones I love the most and something dramatic, like burst into flames in front of everybody. But it's because I'm afraid that I'm testifying today, because fear is not from my Father. It's not from the Lord. But it's been years since I forgave the sins committed against me, but I've never healed myself. I kept walking from pain to pain, never stopping to heal or be healed, and I was bleeding. And I have found that forgiveness is a beautiful thing, but without healing, it is like drinking poison, forgiving the person who poisoned you, and then expecting them to hand you the antidote, when really it was right next to you the whole time, and you could have healed yourself or been healed. So my mother taught Sunday school when I was 5 or so, and my father went to church, and he worked the soundboard. My mother wrote plays and ran a church theater group, and we traveled the county to retirement homes, churches, hospitals until I was about 10. We put on plays every Easter and Christmas, and we had church picnics and pinewood derbies. There were plenty of family trips to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and camping by the rivers. I cling to these memories, like listening to my dad reading me The Lord of the Rings and my brother and I sleeping by the fireplace at night when that was the only heat in our house. These memories and more are like the eye of a storm. They make me happy, but also they'll fill me with anxiety as I take in the full picture. They're moving back in to get ready for church in the morning quickly, but quietly because my parents were hungover, wearing long sleeve shirts in the summer because I had healing wounds on my arms from being beaten, and telling lies, many, many lies about those wounds. When I was in church or in school, my mind would wander and was not on the task at hand. It was on many questions. When will the fight start tonight? What will get broken? And how much time would I have to help my brother upstairs so he wouldn't have to hear it? What if they found where I was hiding this to him this time? And what would I do my homework? Will my mother be sharing my bedroom again with me tonight? And is my baseball bat where I left it? I don't remember when I started putting a bat under my bed, but I remember I always knew it was there. After a time, we stopped going to church, and about this time, I was in elementary school, and that was when I was sexually abused. My parents' marriage had many more challenges around normal than that time as well. So I learned again and again that I was alone, and that I could only hold my family together, only me, and I had to do everything for everyone, or no one would do it. I don't know how many agreements I made with the enemy over the years, but I know I have made many. I never had a chance or saw a chance to learn who I was outside of what the enemy shouted at me. As a teen, I started going with friends to youth group and volunteering at youth centers, going to summer camps. And then my youth pastor tragically committed suicide, and that was taken from me as well. I couldn't keep going to programs. I couldn't keep trusting people to be consistent when they couldn't be. His death was not aimed at me, but it affected me more than most because I had already survived my own attempt at suicide. By the age of 15, I was very depressed and I was struggling and I hit a low point and I tried to jump from my 3-story window. I sat perched on my feet, staring down, angling my body into what I hoped would end everything. I was ready to jump and I blacked out. And I don't know how I got back to my bed, but I know it was God who placed me there. I awoke to the sound of my father's fist breaking the glass in my bedroom door, his hand unlocking the door. My parents, what seemed like flying in while the air went out of the room. They had been looking for me, and from the position, my position on the ledge, I didn't know. Then I was on the floor being kicked repeatedly, not crying but begging for it to end, one way or another, to just end it. And it ended when my mother said, "That's enough." And they left. And I laid on the floor empty, and I remember asking God in that moment why he had delivered me from my death only to let me be beaten again. And this wasn't the last time I asked why. But over the years, I learned that the Lord kept taking me down from ledges, and the enemy kept trying to put me back there. I remember my mother's bouts with alcoholism. When she was sober, she was my best friend, and we had many good times. When she would be lost to her addiction, she was lost to me. And I lost my best friend again and again. And my father, the love and kindness in him, would vanish in anger and his addictions. Many times I shut off myself from God and everything and all feeling. I put band-aids on, books, movies, writing, theater, marching band, things that brought me joy but were idolic in nature. So we flash forward to being 18 and moving to the island. I was free physically, mentally still a prisoner. I met friends who I call family, who my children call Uncle and Nina and Tia, and I met my husband, and I was happy, happier than I had ever been, and I thought physical distance must be the solution. And after the summer, I went back to Michigan, and I went back to finish college because I wanted to prove something to myself, something to everyone else. But my husband and I kept a long-distance relationship, and I spent little time at home unless I was working at my parents' store or I missed my cat or had no one else to go to. I was too proud to go to my grandmother's, too afraid I wasn't worth protecting. Then one day we were at my grandmother's for breakfast, and I'll not get into the details of the argument with my father, but it ended with physical abuse and me calling my husband, packing my bags, and leaving for good. I called my professors at college, talked to the dean, and my unfinished semester was erased, so my college experience was ended as well. I had no money, my car was in my father's name, and I had no clue what to do with my life or what it was supposed to look like next. All I knew at that point was that I had someone who loved me and that I loved back and that I was going home. At 20, we were married, and my parents came to my wedding. I asked my father to walk me down the aisle. At 21, I had our son, and I was over the moon in love with the fact that I had this little man. We were a family, and I knew in that moment that was all I had ever wanted. And then parenting hit with its day-to-day struggles, and my husband struggled with alcoholism. At 22, I had our second child, and she is beautiful, but I was still not living, not the way I should. I kept receiving calls from home about my parents' divorce, about how my brother hated me because I had left him, how my mother was homeless, how my father was living in his father's basement, and so on. And I was scattered. And I was trying to care for a family while mentally living 3,000 miles away. And I was loving motherhood and being a wife, but I could not settle in it. And I was doing it alone, as always, thinking I had to. I can still hear all the agreements in my heart, and on nights my husband struggled with his addiction, he echoed them to me like he was reading a script. Everything came to a head when Christmas Eve, and he has been sober ever since. Thank God. So with a child under each arm, we started again, and we started together. And I could still not understand why I was in pain. I'd forgiven everyone. I knew they were people, just people, gripped by the enemy, and still I wasn't understanding that I was too. Even though I had a grounded, loving, if not skeptical relationship with my parents at this point, it was not really what it should have been. And at that point, I wanted to go back to church for years. I had wanted to do that. I had a relationship with my parents, but I didn't have a relationship with my father. I wanted to try again, and I wanted to really try, but I was scared, and I was scared I would become my mother, and I was scared I would be judged by the sins of my mother committed so long ago in the same church. But the call came, and I went, ready to learn, and in came my kids, and eventually in came my husband, and here I am, and here I learn, and I learn who I am, and I am a daughter of God, a creation of God, and I'm loved and safe. I cannot tell you why these things happened yet or continue to happen in so many young people's lives, but I can tell you that it didn't happen because I'm lesser than or unimportant. I matter, and the enemy attacked me because I matter. How flattering. I know that my father wept with me and weeps with me still when I struggle getting out of bed, when I have a panic attack. I know he is there. I break agreements as I find them, agreements that tell me many things about myself or who I used to believe that I am. I had a dream several months ago And it woke me up to the fact that I needed healing. In the dream that I had, I was walking down a path and there was people and they had knives. And I would get stabbed and I'd say, I forgive you. And I'd keep walking and I was bleeding. And someone else would stab me and I'd say, I forgive you. And I'd keep walking and bleeding everywhere. And it just really hit me that I was forgiving and I could keep forgiving. But what was I doing to really heal myself? What was I doing to fix that? Or how was I letting God come in and fix that I was still hurt? So some days I still struggle getting out of bed. And some nights I still have bad dreams. And some days it's easier to believe my lies, that I'm not beautiful or unique, or that I'm worthless and helpless and I have nothing to offer, but somehow still expected to hold the whole world in my together with my hands, a piece of wire and a paperclip. But most days and more days, I can push it aside and give it to God and remember that He named me Lady and He gave me so much to give, and He does not expect me to hold the world together, and some days not even myself. And I'm just to trust Him and trust what He says about me is true, and that He will continue to be my side. That's my testimony. Thank you.